Hello and welcome to another PlanetIRL.com podcast. I'm Steph, joined today by Cole and Paul, and we have a special guest as well in Doug from OpenPaddock.net. Welcome, Doug. Thanks for joining us today.
Good to be here.
We have gathered together today to talk about all of the new cars that have been released in the last few days and to give our summary thoughts on what we've looked at so far, what we hope to see, and just what our opinions are and what the series should be looking at going forward. So, I guess, guys, let's start by talking about the Dallaras, since they were the first ones that we got to have a look at. Doug, you're our guest, so why don't we start with you?
The one thing I can say about the Dallaras, unimaginative. The maroon one is really just a slight variation of the current format. The yellow one's probably the best. If you haven't seen these, they're all over the blogosphere. Check them out. But the yellow one with the sloped side pods, it's a little more forward-thinking, but still isn't anything really out there. The that red Dallara, meh. It looks kind of hokey. It might be closer to what the league had in mind, but it still looks kind of hokey, and there really doesn't look like there's the room for the additional room for sponsor display and emplacement that the league was hoping to see. I think it's a fail. It looks like they threw together something quickly and said, "All right, here's something," and just to appease whoever was busting their chops about it.
I'm gonna have to.
I don't like any of them.
I'm gonna have to disagree a bit on the red one, Doug. I think the red Dallara is a bit like what I want to see come of the Delta Wing car. It's a bit like the Delta Wing car, which we'll get to later, but with the front wheels a little bit more out where they normally would be, and the wings. And I think if you're going to go with something, and I'm really getting tired of this term, but something a little more revolutionary, I think that's the car to go with, because you can see the old car in it, but you can also see a new generation car. And I think the other two, the yellow one is just not aesthetically pleasing at all, and it's just kind of the same, and the maroon, as you said, it's just an updated version of the current car. The red Dallara, I think, of the Dallaras alone, is definitely my favorite.
I can see where you're coming from. I still think it looks kind of like a lead sled, more than anything else. So just flat. There's no the only way you get any kind of visible surface area for sponsorship, you're looking straight down on top of it.
I can see your point there. Paul and Steph, do you have something?
Well, when these three cars were the only cars that we were looking at, because they came out a fair amount earlier than everything else did, my impression basically was the same as Doug's. I thought that the maroon car was basically a waste of space. It's more or less the car that we have now, with some very slight tweaks. Doesn't address any of the concerns that people have with the current car. I wasn't a fan of the sloped side pods on the yellow car at first. It's growing on me a little bit, but I still don't think that it's overly imaginative. I was at first a little more drawn to the red, just mainly because the wing configurations are sort of different than what we've been seeing frequently. It's a little bit more forward looking, I think. But when you take all three of these as a whole and look at what has been presented since, I don't think any of them is particularly creative or forward looking. Even though, as Cole pointed out, the red Dallara does look a bit like it was along the lines of going in the direction of where the league wanted to see the owners wanted to see the Delta Wing go. I don't know that any of these is really the solution.
Paul?
I would agree. I think I was excited when we saw the Dolaris first. I think the maroon one looks kind of good. It is an update of what we have now, but it addresses the things that people mostly don't like. The more I look at the yellow one, the more I like it. There were a few little tweaks that I think would make it look even better. But from a racing standpoint, we need to address the racing more at this point than we do the aesthetics. Mm-hmm. At least if you're going to talk about this level of change from an evolutionary standpoint. The red one I didn't like when it came out. I still don't like it. I said somewhere, I think it looks like somebody put A.J. Foyt's 1977 car in a time machine, and this is what jumped out. It looks very similar to that, the triangular shape, the big wide end plates or whatever you want to call them in front of the front tires.
I'm not a fan of that front wing at all.
They have that on the Swift, too. I don't really know what the purpose is of large end plates.
Well, I guess it's to direct the airflow over the front tires.
Right.
But I don't like the look of it at all.
It looks more
like a
sports car, almost. Thing.
Yeah.
And on the back end, they have something kind of like that, too. There's too much covering the wheels. It's not an open-wheel car.
Well, we have bigger concerns if that's your idea of that not being an open-wheel car, but we'll get there. No, I agree completely, and I think that one of the first things that I said to Paul when the Dolaris designs came out was, well, what if we take the red car from the cockpit back and do something different with the front? And he still didn't like it. But that was sort of my thinking as I sort of started thinking my way through what we were looking at.
Mm-hmm. And I think the red car, obviously, I like it, and I think it's more forward-thinking, and I think it's somewhere we should go in the future. The yellow car it has a problem with sponsorship area. There are so many different surfaces on that car. You don't have one major, large, flat area to put any sponsorship on it. And the maroon, as you said, it's just kind of what we've had for the last, 30 years?
Yeah. If we were stuck with the Dolaris and we had no other options right now, I think that the red one could be morphed into something that would work for everybody. But with having seen what else is out there, I don't think that any of them is really satisfactory. So that's a good segue into talking about the Swift cars, which made quite profound waves when they hit the internet after everybody had a look at what Dolaris had to offer. Who wants to talk about those first? Paul?
Yeah, the Swift ones, I think, really finally take the IndyCar chassis into a more modern look. They came out with the three designs, the 23 and 32, and then 33 was just a small tweak on 32. With a very radical-looking front wing. 23, at this point, is my favorite design that's been put out. I agree. Except for maybe that front wing. I'm not a big fan of that wavy thing. I'd like to see a little bit more, uniplane, a little bit more, at least something that isn't quite so, looks like a smiley face. except for that front wing, everything about this I really like. I like the Swift lights stuff that they're talking about doing with the different, positions of drivers. And, I'm not all that excited about, the pedal or gas and brake or the some of the other things they're talking about. But I think you have a tremendous potential with mm-hmm. that system. The whole thing with the exposed engine, I don't know how much that is really going to help the system. I think it maybe hurts more than anything from a lack of sponsor space. And I think the Swift engineer on Twitter even admitted that I don't think they realize that additional sponsor exposure space is something that needs to be accommodated in this chassis. But all in all, I think it's a car that a lot of people can stand or get behind. It appeals to the most of the IndyCar fan base. I think it would bring in a lot of those people that have been alienated and this kind of harkens back a little bit to what the DP01 looks like in some respects. So maybe the people that were fans of the DP01 can become fans of this car as well.
Doug, what were your thoughts on the Swift?
Swift knocks it out of the park, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But it's not just because of their designs, although I'll speak to the designs here very quickly. The 23, it's a good-looking car. But at any rate, it looks just like every other winged car since the early 70s. I mean, it is a beautiful looking car, don't get me wrong, but it's the same stuff that we've had for a while. But I do want to mention the exposed engine with maybe the lack of sponsorship ads. It depends on who's doing the sponsoring. If you're going to allow multiple engine manufacturers to come in and play, then exposing the engine bay is a brilliant way for them to showcase their product. They can have the special treatment on the headers or something else says, here's our lump, our stuff is the greatest, go out and buy our cars. It's going to have our engine in it. If that isn't so much of a critical thing, it's an easy task to simply redesign that back cowling and cover that up and allow more space for decals. So I don't think the sponsorship stuff is a problem, really, with the open back. But I will say the number 32 car just looks too much like a prototype car, a Le Mans prototype. It doesn't look like an open wheel racer. The little adjustments they made for the 33 car is brilliant. Number 33 car, I think, by far is my favorite concept design of any of them that I've seen. Yes, the front end are a little pointy with the little nacelles in front of the wheels. You know,
looks a bit like a weapon.
That for what it is. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. But I mean, that can be modified. That can be changed. But maybe they keep it. It would really increase the aero efficiency by getting the airstream around those wheels. I mean, after all, the wheels are just like egg beaters in the wind. But where Swift really hits it, where they really gain major points, isn't in the particular pictures that they showed us of the cars. Yeah, they're beautiful, but that's not the real thing. What I was really impressed with in their press release was all the partners that are bringing along for the ride and the new technology and engineering concepts they're bringing along as well. Their aero treatment on the back, the unfortunately named Mushroom Buster, which I could have found a better name for that, but it's a brilliant device to kind of break up that wake turbulence, try to make that into a more laminar flow so the person behind them can get proper airflow and efficiency following nose to tail. Of course, that's one thing that for years has been the bane of winged race cars, is that wake turbulence. Mm-hmm. And, you know, here they are bringing this a great concept to try to minimize that. But they're also bringing Cray, and who else was it they're bringing in? They had a whole bunch of people. They have Mark One Composites from Indianapolis, Cruden doing the simulation. They have Cray. If you've not heard of Cray, they were the inventors and still leaders in supercomputing. Just high-end stuff, fantastic. So all the partners, all the engineering innovations that they're bringing, I think that's what makes Swift tops. Their cars, their pictures, well, they're just that, they're pictures. And they do look good. But it's all the other things they bring to the party that really put them on top of it in my book.
The other thing that struck me, and this is a very small point, but it stuck out in my mind, is in the time shortly after the Swift release, there is, and Paul mentioned this earlier, there's an engineer from Swift who's on Twitter. Her nick is Pink Janeer, if anybody wants to go looking for her. She's great. And one of the first things that I noticed right after the release was that when people started chatting about the different elements on Twitter that they liked or they disliked, she jumped in and started having active conversations with people about, well, if you don't like this, what about this? And we could try this. And really engaging fans and trying to have a conversation about where to take the designs to make more people happy and sort of come up with new ideas. And that stuck out to me as something that no one else has done yet. And I think that that is a really key point in that Swift seems to get that it isn't just about, you know, the engineering and the car, but there's the element of what people want to see as well, and they're taking that into account. And I think that that's a really key element in their process that they're going through with this.
Yeah, I think all three could use some tweaking. I like number 23 the best. 32 and 33, the side pods kind of throw me off a little bit. It does look a bit like a prototype, like Doug said.
32 definitely does. 33, I don't know if I agree with so much, but the side pods on 33 do worry me again from that sponsorship standpoint. It doesn't look like there's a lot of, with that sort of twisted look in the middle of it, mm-hmm. I don't know how they would really be able to do much in terms of design on that. But.
And if you look at the 32 from the side, there really is no horizontal surface to it at all.
Right.
And that's the thing I like about the 23. I agree with Doug that the Mushroom Buster, however unfortunate its name is, is a great idea. We saw it in Formula Nippon over in Japan. I don't know. I'm not an engineer, and I don't know aerodynamics enough to say this, but I don't know how it'll do at somewhere like Texas going 230, if it's going to change anything, or what it'll do at that high of a speed. So I think it'll definitely need some testing and probably some tuning at a speed that high. But overall, the Swifts are my favorite. The Swift lights, I could go without. They're kind of hokey, and I think they could be a safety concern at night races for drivers, being a bit distracting. And I don't think the lights in ALMS on the prototypes have really helped. I never really noticed them when the cars are on track because the way they're moving so fast, you don't really see them all that much. But, you know, it's not going to hurt anything.
Here's a question that might make me sound stupid, and I don't ever beat around the bush about the fact that I'm really not an engineer. I don't know this stuff super well, but I think that on the Swift designs in particular, what we're looking at mostly is road course wing packages, right? And I can't help but wonder if we're putting different wings on these to work on the ovals, how much that changes the appearance and how much it really doesn't make the cars look that different from what we're using now. Like, I'm not even articulating myself well because I realize how stupid this question sounds. Do any of you have any insight on that? Because I really don't know.
Actually, I think I heard somewhere, I don't know if it was the Swift or maybe it was the Dallara, that they're going to use the same wing package for both. Doug or Paul, do you know anything about that?
I had not heard that. I think on 32, we're looking at an oval package.
Mm-hmm.
23 looks like a road rear wing.
And front wing, too, really. I don't see a wing like that.
I don't know what we're looking at on the front wing.
Yeah, that's the front wing on 23. For those of you who haven't seen it, there are pictures on the site with the numbers that'll show you better, but it's very different than what we've ever seen. I'll put it that way. It's curvy. There's no horizontal plane to the wing.
Well, it's reminiscent of a Formula One wing with the multi-element design and the non-linear design. In terms of road course versus oval packaging, I don't think that for any of them you're really going to see a major difference in the overall shape of the car. Yes, on the speedways, like on the 32, you might have a single main plane on the rear and a very thin and trim front wing between those two nacelles in front of the front tires. But on the road courses, okay, maybe you add a couple of more aero elements to the front wing of the 32. You have a couple more elements on the rear wing. It's not going to change the nose shape or the body shape all that much. I don't think it's going to significantly affect the outward appearance of the car any more than changing packages does now.
No, exactly. But I mean, in terms of the way that a casual fan would look at a car as it looks in an oval package as opposed to a road package, the difference in the appearance of those wings can make it, it's a pretty big shift in perception.
I'm looking at one of the pictures Swift sent out, and it's the picture of the car on the California Speedway. It's computer generated, of course, and it's using the really large rear wing on an oval. I don't know if that's just for...
That's artistic license right there.
That's another concern I had, and that's really evident on the current Dallara, is the difference between the oval and the road course. The current car we have now on road course configuration is the ugliest racing car I've ever seen. There's just too much.
Well, it's kind of a hack job, isn't it?
Yeah, they just kind of threw it together in 2005.
Well, it's not really designed.
That's not even true, Cole, because they were running short ovals before 2005, and it's the same configuration. I personally actually like it better in the short oval and road course configuration, to tell you the truth.
The front wing on the current Dallara in road and short oval configuration is just too much.
Yeah, but the nose doesn't look quite as long when it's in road course form.
It does have a snowplowish looking appearance.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's my opinion.
That's your opinion. So, any more thoughts on the Swift? I did want to get Doug, what are your thoughts on the Swift Lite again? The Swift Lite system is just kind of something we've never seen.
It is a gimmick, isn't it?
It's gimmicky.
But I think it's a brilliant gimmick. I think that's just super cool, being able to do that, having an active decal, for lack of a better word. They mentioned being able to show race position, which is a good thing. The fuel load, the brake and throttle position. All those are neat. And maybe they get some additional fan attraction going. But where I really see the Swift Lights being a serious advantage is when someone realizes how to use that technology, put down this 1 mil thick active imaging layer, and incorporate a sponsor ad into that.
Mm-hmm.
When you can show a sponsor that, you're not just going to have this flat decal, you're going to have something that maybe has some animation to it or has some sort of luminescence to it, especially at a night race, mm-hmm. that's going to sell a lot better than, okay, we're going to put your 2x4-inch sticker on our front wing.
Right, but if we're already concerned about the drivers being distracted by a little light that shows the
position
of the race.
I'm not especially concerned about that, because if you look at those cars going around, say, Texas at night, there's already tons of specular reflection off those cars, and they deal with it. They do mention that, all those reflections are something to get used to, and that someone who's not driven a night race before, it catches them off guard a little bit. But if you're in the series, you're going to be doing night races, you got to get used to it. I think having something like the Swift Lights thing on the car is not going to be that much more to overcome. I understand, Cole, your safety concerns, but I don't think that they're insurmountable, and I don't think it's over and above really what they have to deal with on a night race right now anyway.
Mm-hmm. All right, I can see that, and I really like the idea of a dynamic sponsorship logo on the side of the car. That would be that'd be really interesting to see.
I just like that they brought something different.
It's new.
It's completely different, completely new, really thinking outside the box, and it just sort of demonstrates that they are capable of doing this, and who knows what else that they can come up with. That's what caught my attention with the Swift Lights more than anything.
Mm-hmm. And just to piggyback this a little bit before we get to the Delta Wing conversation, which will inevitably take up quite a bit of time, I want to mention to you an idea I've been tossing around with some people lately, and I think Swift would be a good partner to do it with. What are your thoughts on having a sort of spec tub and basic chassis, but then letting teams select their own front, rear, mirror, engine cowling, just kind of selecting bits for the car from a selection of 5 or 6 different options. You have an options list, and you kind of build your own car, but the pieces are already made, and you add them to your own tub.
I think,
like a
obviously...
Kit.
Yeah, like that.
I think that no one's going to question that any opportunity for variety is a good thing, but the problem is the cost. As soon as you have to make more pieces, the cost goes up that much more, and one of the stated objectives of the new chassis is to keep the cost down for the teams, so I just don't know if I see that happening.
Well, it'll also drive up the cost if they have to have multiple manufacturers, which is something I think they also want but can't have at this time. I think that will...
Right, but that's it. It's a cost increase one way or another. It's not anything that is going to bring the cost up. Multiple manufacturers or the same manufacturer offering multiple options, it's not going to fly right now.
Well, I just really think that would increase variations on the car, so you'd have one team.
Nobody disagrees with you, Cole. Obviously, everybody wants this.
And I think it's worth the cost, is what I'm saying.
Absolutely. This is the huge paradox that they're dealing with right now, right? If you only have a single car, then you're running, well, ideally, I think they're looking at multiple engine manufacturers, so we're not going to be completely spec, but if you have a single car, lower cost up front, but less interest in the long run, right? It's, if you can put a little bit money in the beginning to put some variety in and give people a little bit more interest, then the thought process is that down the road, that investment would pay back in terms of people being more interested in the series and selling tickets and sponsorship and blah, blah, blah. But it's, you know, where does that money come from? The checkbook's closed, guys. There's nobody throwing money at this thing anymore. And, you know, it's just this great paradox, and it's really hard to know at this stage what is the better solution for the teams and the series as a whole, because obviously everybody knows that in the end that's eventually what we want, but where's the money going to come from, and how do you jumpstart that generation of funds to make it happen?
And we really don't know how much it would cost, though, is the thing.
That's something that hasn't come out in this whole process, as it is. Nobody knows what anybody wants to charge for any of these. I mean, we could be looking at the Swifts and saying, look how gorgeous these cars are. These could cost 3 times as much as the Dallaras. We don't know.
And you know, that's an interesting point, is I keep hearing people say we can't have a spec chassis, or we have to have a spec chassis because otherwise they become too expensive. Somebody posted... I can't recall where it was. It may have been just a response to one of our posts or something. But talking about really how much of a cost the actual car is to a team's budget. You know, I've heard numbers anywhere from John Barnes saying, you know, it's $2 million a car by the time you add everything in there, to, you know, last year when Sarah Fisher got her new tub, they were saying $300,000 for the tub, and for the car. So if you start looking at the difference between those two and the difference of where we want to be, you know, let's just throw out $5 million for the budget. Obviously, some are spending more, some are spending less. But even if you're spending, let's say, $1.5 million on a car, which would include the car, all your electronics, you know, the engine, which, by the way, you only have one engine lease, no matter if you have a primary and 4 backup cars or you have one primary car. You know, you only have one engine lease for that entrant. So, you know, we take those things into account, and it's not like you're buying a new car every year anyway. So when you look at the cost of a team to operate over 2 or 3 years, you know, if you're spending, say, $15 million over 3 years, how much of that is actually coming from the car, from the car itself?
Yeah, how much are you spending on the crew to service the car, and how much is having the company develop 3 or 4 front wings, how much is that going to drive up the cost?
Exactly.
If you have a spec, main chassis and body, how much can it really drive up the cost if it's just something little like that, since you don't have to do quite as much development?
Right, but who's paying for the development, guys?
What's that?
Who pays for the development of the cars now, Steph? I mean...
Nobody! We've had the same cars for 10 years!
Exactly, but...
Well, no, hang on, because there is development going on, because Penske spent a crap load of money to develop the rear view mirrors on the current Dallara.
Right, but
they
Panther
spent insane amounts of money doing these tiny little things. No, Panther didn't, but they certainly copied it.
Exactly.
What I'm saying is the budgets are the budgets. The owners will ran up and down, cost too much, yet still, they're the ones that will spend the money to figure out how to sand down the monocoque just a little bit so the decal stays flush with the outside. Seriously?
Right, but that's stuff that happens after the car has already been developed. That's part of the normal sort of tweaking of the car to just get that little bit of an extra edge in the race. That's not what we're talking about here.
Yeah,
we're
talking about
getting the car actually built in the first place. Who covers
that R&D
cost?
Right.
But this is a one-time cost. You don't have to pay this every year.
My point is that if you spread that cost out over, several years, and let's hope we don't have this car for another 8 years. Let's hope we don't have to reinvent the wheel in 2020. But from an overall budget standpoint, the chassis and the car are not what are killing teams these days. I mean, yes, the car is expensive at, that John Barnes quoted at $680,000 for the current Dallara.
Well, what did Kevin say? Was it one point?
That actually, brings up a really good point in terms of the spec versus non-spec argument. And that is that once you have one manufacturer that's building a spec car, who gets to tell them how much the car is going to cost, or how do we keep the actual cost of the cars themselves under control? Because isn't that what's happened with this? Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm not actually sure I should go down this road.
Well, you know what you're treading into, Steph. What you're treading into right now is what the argument is from the owner's standpoint of the Delta Wing concept. You're exactly heading right into where we need to go with this next.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then we'll just hop right into it with the Delta Wing then. Here's my question to you before we get the really heated discussion started about the Delta Wing. If you had not seen any pictures of this car, you all listened to Kurt Cavan's interview of Ben Bolby, didn't you?
Yeah.
Okay. If you had heard that interview and read all the specs and all the info about it and not seen the pictures, would you support this car?
Oh, absolutely.
Exactly.
Based on what
everything that Ben Bowlby has to say is right. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Based on what you just said, Cole, no, I would not.
You would not.
I would not. I still would not be ready to take that leap to say we need to just throw away the last 30 years and go for something different. When the thing that made me start to get more on the Delta Wing concept side, is the article I read yesterday by Marshall Pruitt that really sat down with Ben and I think maybe Ganassi was in on it as well. But I think he had 20 points about driving home that the Delta Wing theory is not just the car. The Delta Wing theory is so much more. It's a technical advisory board to the league. It's a group of team owners that unlike CART, where the team owners ran, the inmates are running the asylum, here they're an advisor to the league. They make up the technical aspect of the league, and they will say what's going to be allowed and what's not going to be allowed in terms of chassis parts, body parts, and they will set the price. They'll say, fine, you can play. You can build You can build a tie rod, but it's going to cost this much money. I don't care how much it takes you to develop it. It's going to cost $5,000 for me to call you up and order one of those. If it costs you $15,000, well, sorry, you can play, but you're going to lose money. And that's the concept of this is more than just the car. It's the team owners now taking an active role, as I think it was John Barnes said again. I keep going back to John Barnes. he was a very crucial in that Marshall Pruitt article. But he said for the last 15 years, we've basically been slaves to the league. The league has told us where we're going to spend our money. The league has told us when we're going to spend our money. The league has told us who we're going to send our money to. Mm-hmm. And it hasn't helped. You know, this is the owner's attempt to take back the control and the power and really use the money where they know best to do it, or at least where they think they know best to do it.
And I think that's great, because if you look at the last 20 years in racing, what has stayed put through that amount of time? It's not the series, it's the teams. The teams are what the sport is, and you have to keep them happy, and you have to keep new teams coming in, and I think this project will really help that. The thing I really like about the Delta Wing is that people assume that the concept car we saw is what they're getting when the new car comes out, if they select the Delta Wing, which I am hesitant to say they will, but that...
Well, they'd be pretty stupid, too, with the way that the backlash has been.
Well, and that's the thing, though. People are assuming that this is the car we're going to get, but this is... That's a concept.
No,
it's an open-source car.
Yeah.
Anyone can go in and say, hey, we're going to fiddle with that and make it different. This car could be completely different by the time May rolls around. They're sending... You're not buying the car, you're buying the plans to the car. And until it's selected, anyone can do anything they want with it and change it and develop it to be something a little more traditional, which would be good. But that's just how I started this. If you hadn't seen the picture of it, if you just went by what was said and by the stats and stuff, it's a great project and it's a great idea. Maybe the car that was displayed, the concept, is not exactly what we want to see, but the idea behind it is great.
The problem is that as soon as you start tweaking this car to make it more like along the lines of what people want to see, all of the benefits of the design are taken away.
Exactly.
Everybody wants to pull the front wheels out and put a suspension on. As soon as you do that, you got to put a front wing on it. And as soon as you put a front wing on it, there's another element that's going to cost money every time you got to replace the front nose and wings. And that is exactly what they're trying to get away from.
And you're just talking about the physics of it, Steph. But one of the driving things about this is that the car owners want to be much more relevant in today's automotive world. Believe it or not, the three and a half liter pushrod V8 that Honda's putting there is really not relevant to the real world anymore. Nor is the 2.65 liter turbocharged Cosworth for all the kart and champ car fans out there. Those aren't relevant engines anymore. What's relevant now are the small 4-liter turbocharge, or a normally aspirated V6 that you will find in your upper mid-level cars, I guess, now a lot of times. But those are the engine that manufacturers want to push, and they want to show the technology that's available in a 4-cylinder turbocharged engine. Once you start to tweak the Delta Wing chassis, like you said, everyone wants to put the front wheels out where they traditionally have been. Once you do that, you increase your drag. You all of a sudden become 50% less efficient, and now you have to increase your engine output to match that.
Yeah, absolutely right.
It's all an integrated concept.
And I think before we get into this too much, I think the thing we really need to see is have this car tested on a track. Put an engine in it and really put some laps on it, see if it works before we start saying we're going to use this. And I think we need to see that with all of them, because something could go radically different with the car once it's on track.
But the other thing, too, just to take that point and combine it with Paul's, is that this car is creating so many mental blocks that people are having a really hard time getting over. Paul makes a really good point that the whole concept behind this car is that the engine is smaller, less powered, but making the cars go that much faster because of the design of this car. But have you seen a single person say, oh, what is it, 300 horsepower? Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what an Indy car should have in it. No, everybody is backlashing against, oh, my passenger car has more horsepower on the engine than that. My passenger car, has, I have a V8 in mine. It's this real difficulty to look past. I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't know if people are ready to accept what they're proposing as being a race car.
Steph, I buy that argument, but at the same time, I think when push comes to shove, when a car can do 235 miles an hour at Indianapolis, I don't think people are really that concerned about how it does it.
I mean,
you went 235 at Indianapolis in 1995 with the Honda engine that made 900 horsepower.
I mean,
you went
one
231 at Indianapolis in 2007 with a Honda normally aspirated that made probably 70% of that.
635?
Yeah, they were in the mid 600s.
I know, and I mean, from my standpoint, and I feel truly like an island in the sea with this point of view, because I seem to be the only person who thinks that this is relevant. I love this fact about this car, not necessarily the car as a whole, but the fact that they're thinking about efficiency and sort of greening up the racing. I'm Canadian. We're all tree huggers up here, guys. I think this is fantastic, and I really think that in terms of relevance in the real world, this is something that they desperately need to be working on, but no one else seems to see it that way. No one else wants the racing to be relevant in terms of making cars more efficient or environmentally friendly. They want to see great big honking powerful engines going at it at Indianapolis.
I'm tired of hearing about green racing, honestly. It's great and all, you're trying to save the environment, but in every series, when you're the green series, look at ALMS with the electric car, and look at, you know, Grand Am is starting to do that too, and F1 had KERS, that didn't work, but it just gets kind of hokey after a while. Something should still be racing, and I think Paul made a great point with the speed, and that's something I hammer on just about every podcast these days, is get these cars to a record-breaking speed again. You're getting a new car. It's going to be safer. Push them past 240 again. I want to see a record broken at Indy, and I haven't seen that. And I think if we do that again, interest will come back because people want to see fast cars. And doing 220 is not fast anymore. It just isn't.
And, Steph, I agree. I think we're on the island together, but we may be on other sides of the island. You know,
oh, there's a shock.
to be honest, I'm really not that concerned about if it's green or not. I mean, I know, call me terrible, but, you know, from the standpoint of what the Indy Racing League represents, or the IndyCar Series represents in the grand scheme of things, it's a pretty small little bit of green. But what is interesting, though, is when you take that green argument and expand it, it means that you're relevant with it means you're relevant with the current auto industry, and the auto industry wants to go green. So if the auto industry is excited because we're using a 400 horsepower or a four cylinder engine, mm-hmm. and you know you're reducing, or they can say, hey, look, we're using this 400 this gosh, what's wrong with me? We're using this four cylinder engine, putting out 300 horsepower and going 230 miles an hour, but we're using very little fuel doing. We're doing 12 miles to the gallon at Met.
Yeah.
Then it's critically important because your car manufacturers are excited, and now they're promoting the series. And I know we've trampled on Doug here, so I'm going to let him talk because I think he agrees with us here.
In some respects, yes. I like the idea of going to a more relevant engine. This is something that the WRC has seen and is doing. They're right now using a 2-liter. Turbocharged. Now they're for I think the 2011 season they're going to go to a 1.6 liter turbocharged engine, which is brilliant. And you know, moving to that same sort of platform in the IndyCar, you know, using something that has a bit more connection with a genuine road car. In fact, it almost brings us back to the concept of dropping a stock block in an Indy car and going racing, doesn't it? But, you know, there are very few cars anymore that do have a V8, and those that do have a V8, they're beasts. I mean, they're hugely massive, and it's not just horsepower alone that is going to drive a car. You need to look at the ratio of the power to the weight, and this car is going to be ultra light, but my concern about the car is not about it being able to achieve 235 miles an hour at IMS. And Cole, I agree with you that we need to get back close to record speed. We don't need to be breaking records every single year, but we need to have the possibility of there being a record broken, because it's been far too long since we've heard those words, it's a new track record.
Yeah.
So, but at any rate, my concern about this car is what it's going to be like on a road course. Now, the configuration that it has at first was concerned about that long nose with the narrow wheels. You know, how's the thing going to turn? But there's very little mass up there. Most of the mass is in the back. And if you listen to Bowlby on Trackside, he talked about the moment of inertia being very, very low. That means that it's going to turn very easily. But how is it going to accelerate? I really have a concern about a 300 horsepower engine. Even with a lighter weight car, I don't think it's light enough that you're going to get much acceleration out of a turn, say, the hairpin at Long Beach.
Everyone uses that
too. I know.
Well, that's the slowest turn on the circuit, on the entire schedule, and so I think that's why it keeps coming up. But at any rate, my biggest concern outside of its appearance, so the appearance is just awful.
It's not an open wheel car. That's the thing that everybody keeps bringing up. It is not an open wheel car.
Okay, actually, it's a Bonneville flats.
Speed
record car. But if you know, I've heard a lot of arguments that certainly there's more to getting a car to accelerate out of turn than just power to weight ratio. However, I don't know. I remain unconvinced that it's going to have any better drive out of a slow turn than the current Dallara.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's one of our biggest concerns about the current package is its poor road course performance.
And one last point on the Delta Wing here, and you kind of alluded to it a little bit, is the safety aspect. I think I heard this car, particularly from a side impact T-boning angle, there is no protection whatsoever for the driver.
Okay, now hang on a second.
Now, hold on. I'm not done. Don't interrupt me, Canadian.
Okay.
Don't interrupt me.
Go ahead.
It has all the revolutionary intrusion panels, but there should be some sort of side pod component-filled stuff between the driver. And I know the tub is wider, but still, there should be some crumple area between the driver and the car hitting the driver. And with that big, long, pointy, spear, weapon-like nose...
That big, long, entire crumple zone area nose?
When you're going 230, I don't care if it crumples, it's going to hurt.
Well, sure.
And
it's going to hurt anyway. It hurts in the current car.
Yeah, but there's
all
more
you got
stuff.
In the current car. Yeah, exactly. A tire and a few suspension rods. That's about it. That's the only difference.
No, from the side, side pod filled with
the
stuff that is there. And the other safety concern I have, and I'll let you get in here in a minute, is... on road courses, again, it looks like, and I know the weight is low and it's low in the car, but it looks like if you really threw that thing into a corner at low speed, it looks like it wants to roll like a trike. The inside rear tire wants to lift from what it looks like visually.
Cole, you realize that this car was designed by Ben Bowlby, right?
Go on.
Do you really think he didn't think of this stuff? This man has been building championship winning racing cars for how many years?
I still think, yes, and how have they worked?
Longer than you've been alive, Cole.
Shut up. I'm going to bring that up.
You know, I had the same concern you did, Cole.
Thank you. Hey,
when I saw that, I thought, man, that's going to be very hard to turn. But after listening to Bowlby talk on Trackside and understanding how little mass there is out in that long front nose, most of the mass is there in the back, very concentrated around the center of mass, the car will actually be very easy to turn. It'll be more nimble than the current Dallara. From an engineering standpoint, performance standpoint, I have no concerns about this car being able to turn and being very, very nimble. Again, my only performance concern is about its acceleration at low speeds. That's it. I am fully convinced that this that if you take this car through a sequence of high speed S's, for example, you take it down that backstretch through the kink at Mid Ohio, and there into turn four, I think it'll perform beautifully.
And well, Doug, you and I actually stood there this year watching the race,
yep.
And you saw how much they have to throw the car on entry, no matter how light the steering is.
Yes.
If you want to go around that quick, you have to just launch the car into the corner. And
right,
the way
absolutely.
This is so narrow, it feels like that inside rear is going to pick up off the ground. And I think that'll cause
but
more acceleration.
There's no mass up front there. All the weight's going to shift to the outside rear wheel. And that's why you have such a wide track there on the back.
What? Okay. I think I see where you're coming.
It's not going to have the same dynamics as a current car where the you have a rectangular type of track. You know, like I said, I had that same concern. Like, you know, there's a reason why three-wheeled ATVs aren't on the market anymore, right?
Mm-hmm.
You turn those things and flip them, away you go. But after hearing more about the design, thinking more about the physics of the situation, especially into a turn like that, my concerns are alleviated. I think it'll perform well.
Mm-hmm. And one more...
Provided it can accelerate.
You did mention the rectangular track, and the last thing I want to bring up with the Delta Wing, as far as safety goes, is if you spin on an oval, it looks like it's very prone to sort of do like a NASCAR and roll as soon as it gets sideways. And I don't know how that's going to work, but that's the one thing
I
that
promise
really...
You this, that
is a concern. That is a concern.
It looks like it's going to roll as soon as the thing gets sideways.
Well, and that's what crash testing is going to be for, and you know, and of course, Bolpe has thought about this, but also consider that simulation is just that—it's simulation. It's not real life, and I'm sure they've simulated it in that kind of sideways situation, but you know, ultimately, we'll just have to see how the thing crash tests. But I cannot abide its current look. The look is absolutely hideous, it's atrocious, and I know that you know, if a car performs really well, it shouldn't matter what it looks like. It's fast, therefore it's beautiful. But I'm sorry, no, it isn't.
It's just not an open wheel race car.
Exactly.
And that's the one thing that people are not going to be able to get over.
And I think we're all getting a bit ahead of ourselves here, and considering that the league is actually going to pick this, which I don't think politically they are. But if they do, that first race with this car, the first time anyone gets behind the wheel of this thing in traffic, is going to be a very interesting race.
Well, and that's a perfect segue into the other point that we wanted to cover was, will the league pick this car? And if not, politically, what does that mean? Because there have been rumblings of the owners saying, well, if the league's not going to pick this, maybe we'll do our own thing. And, you know, that brings up that dreaded split word again, and none of us want that, but... It does, the divide over this is so deep that I think it's really generating a lot of concern.
Yeah, I would be shocked if the league accepts this car as the 2012 car, but I'd be just as shocked if they didn't adopt the overall concept that we talked about earlier with the Delta Wing Technical Advisory.
Problem is that we're just plain running out of time.
Well, that's what I mean. I think the league and the owners are going to have to work that together, where the league has, or the owners have say, regardless of which manufacturer's concept, I mean, the owners are going to say, you know what, this is what we're going to pay for your car. Figure out how to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how much we're going to pay for parts for your car. Figure out how to make it happen. I think we have to go that way. And maybe in 2015, 16, maybe we can move toward that more radical look that we see now. But, you know, I don't know if I again, I don't know if I said this on the blog or not, but I think what scares people is that, yes, IndyCar has always been a place of evolution. And if you look at the cars from 1911 to 2010, they're obviously very radical. But we got there incrementally. I mean, the Cooper Climax of 61 didn't come in, you know, during the off-season of 60. And then all of a sudden in 61, we had 33 cars that had rear engines. You know, coming into the 70s, we didn't all of a sudden go from the low Cooper Climax-esque cars to winged Eagles or Gurneys overnight. We gradually mixed those in, and we saw that those were better cars that were beating what was already out there. We've never had a revolution where everything changed overnight.
And Paul,
and that's what scares people.
Paul,
well, and if you can't help but wonder, if a car was meant to be shaped like a fighter jet, wouldn't it be already by now?
Paul, the point you made when we talked a couple days ago about this, and it's a really good point, is why are we changing for the sake of change? If you're going to adopt something this radical, don't just do it to be radical. Adopt it to go faster or be safer. Don't just, oh, we want.
Well, they are, yeah. Cole. I mean, they're.
But something major. Don't just. I feel like we're just changing to change is the problem.
Problem is that changing to change generates a whole lot of press.
And a whole lot of cost for teams.
But I think that that's part of what they're thinking, is that, getting attention is a really important thing right now. I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying I think that that's what their mindset is.
Well, they're not getting attention.
Not yet. They haven't built the car. For the first time this thing's on the track, people will pay attention for a while.
I don't see it. I see us paying attention. I see racing people paying attention. But if you don't do something radical to change the racing, not for the sake of change, for the sake of speed or something, you're not going to attract new people. You're just going to keep talking to the same people you keep talking to for the last 10 years.
True, but if you adopt a formula where Chevrolet, where Ford, where Audi, where Hyundai, where Kia, where Renault, where Bentley, where name your engine manufacturer can come in and say, look, we can build an engine for this that goes back to the Delta Wing concept here, a specific flow rate, whether it's a hundredth of a gallon a second, whatever that flow rate is, any manufacturer can build that, an engine that does that. Now all of a sudden, if you have, you know, 8-9 different engine companies that are supplying these engines, now if they can all promote their engine in the series and promote an engine that supplies the IZOD IndyCar series that can go 230, that's attention.
That doesn't need to happen in this chassis, though.
No, maybe not necessarily in this chassis. But that, again, that's another concept of the Delta Wing, though. It's a non-stressed engine. You can drop any engine in there you want to. I mean, you can drop an O2 Honda Civic Si fueled up on nitro, you know, if you wanted to.
Sweet.
As long as it meets the flow rate.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree with the points you've both just made there. Anything else, guys?
Okay.
Have we lost Doug?
Doug?
No, I'm here, and I'm trying to think if I have any comments over and above what y'all have put forward, and I don't think so.
Okay, well, I think we'll just we'll close up here then.
Hey, Cole?
Yes, sir.
We do need to say happy birthday to our favorite Canuck.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, boy.
Somebody turned 27 yesterday.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for the fifth time. Oh, you're sweet, guys. Thank you.
A very happy birthday, Steph.
Happy birthday,
thanks,
Steph.
Guys.
It just happened to coincide with the opening of your Olympics up there as well.
It sure did, yeah. It was a proud day yesterday.
The Olympia has come to Canada.
Okay, well, I guess we'll wrap things up here, eh, guys?
Yeah.
All right, well, I
want to thank Doug, especially for coming on with us, and be sure to check out openpaddock.net for his material, much more professional than ours. And as always, thanks to Paul and Steph for joining us here. And I think, Steph, did you have any last things, or Paul, or Doug even?
Nope, I think that does it for me.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. And as always, check out planetirl.com for all your news and views on the IndyCar series. Thanks for listening.